So my first conversation was with the real estate agent, and that was actually a fairly easy one to get involved with. Because with the mortgage meltdown that we've got and the real estate market being affected and the bailout and everything going on with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, fairly easy to start a conversation up with her about how the market is affecting her and what's going on. So that's literally how I started. My opening gambit was to just talk about, hey, how's the real estate market? How's this mortgage thing affecting your business? And as you can imagine, here we are in the end of September, beginning of October, and the pulse and bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is still in the news. It was prior to the vote when I originally talked to her, but even as I'm recording this, they still haven't resolved everything just yet. So it was easy to get that conversation going. So, how was business? She started complaining, and times are tough, and people aren't moving, and the people that are interested in buying, they're worried about whether or not they're getting a mortgage and blah, 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 blah. And then I asked her how that was affecting her and her investments. And she gave me what was, at this time of the conversation, a very normal, natural, knee-jerk reaction, particularly because she has not come to me seeking financial advice. She gave me a surface knee-jerk reaction, which was, don't even get me started. And I said, well, actually, I'm curious. I mean, how's it going and how are you handling it and what are you doing? And she immediately started to tell me about the fact that she's been a double dipper in terms of the meltdown in the economy. Her first whack was in the neighborhood that we are in. We had a massive run up several years ago in real estate prices. There was a period, I guess about a year and a half or 2 years ago, that there was a new subdivision within my neighborhood that was opening up, and it was literally run by lottery, meaning that if you felt like you wanted to live in this neighborhood, you would show up on the appointed day and you would get a ping pong ball with a number on it. And number one, when number one went, they got to go pick whatever lot that they could buy, put the money down and go from there. And then number two got to pick, and then number three. And as always happens in these speculative bubbles, people began to think this is going to go on forever. And this is exactly what happened to my real estate friend. She went out and started buying up real estate, flipping it, made a ton of money very quickly in a short period of time, assumed that this was going to go on forever, and found herself very overloaded in real estate at the point when the music stopped and things started to dry up and prices started to go down. And then suddenly all of these speculators are starting to sell, which had pushed the markets down even more. She was, however, able to weather that storm and get out of some of her things. And she does have a diversified portfolio. So despite the fact that she's in the real estate business, she's not only in the real estate business. She does work with a full service advisor with a nationally recognized firm, has a nice diversified portfolio. But that's part two of the whammy. Just when things seem like they're starting to come out of control, not only do real estate issues continue, but now she's got the double whammy of the market being down 25% from where it was 1 year ago. And even though she hasn't gotten her statement, and I don't know if she's running a chart, she knew that that's about how much her portfolio was down from this time last year. So when I got to my hyper open-ended question with her, which was just if you had a realistic magic wand and you could change anything about your financial situation, what would you change or what would you eliminate? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the first thing out of her mouth was stop the bleeding. Now, obviously, my questioning of her has dredged up some particularly ugly history over the course of the last 2.5 or to 3 years, which means that she is not going to be in a very resourceful state right now. And as either her advisor, if I was her existing advisor, or her prospective new advisor, if I was prospecting her, I'm not in a good conversational place right now. In fact, since I can neither go back and change what has happened with her, nor can I guarantee her that if she'll come with me, things will be better, I'm in a dead end conversationally. Now, even though I don't know this for a fact, my hallucination is this woman is going to be able to easily weather the storm, and she's going to be okay at the other end of it. So what I need to do now is time bridge from where we are to get beyond this crisis and get her thinking forward again. And my strategy here would be the same regardless of whether I was prospecting her or she was already my existing client. So now I want to use a linguistic time machine, and I want to transport her beyond this current crisis. And to do that, I actually transported her back in time first. So I said, yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I mean, these are unprecedented times. I don't think we've ever seen anything exactly like this before. And then I said, I don't remember anything like this. Do you? Now, this is a calibration question. She can either come back and say, oh, yeah, I've seen something exactly like this before, or she can go back and compare something like this to, you know, this reminds me of blah, 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 blah. Or she can go the other way, which is what she did. She said, you know, I don't think we've ever seen like this before. We are in uncharted waters. So here we are traveling a little bit down this dead end, but trying to get to a point where we can reframe the way that she's looking at this. And when she said to me, uncharted waters, that was a golden mental hook. And I said, uncharted waters, that's exactly what this is. In fact, we've never had, to the best of my knowledge, a situation exactly like what we've got today. Now, I think that's a fairly safe statement to make all the time, because with as many moving variables as we've got, things just, you're not going to repeat everything. But this is me talking to her. We have been in uncharted waters before. In fact, as I look back over my investing career, you know what does occur to me? Is very often the times that we've been in uncharted waters have in the end turned out to be some of the very best buying opportunities. And then I went back and listed several that I knew she might be able to remember as well. So I went back and talked about 1982 when prime was 21% and unemployment was 14%. And every day the newspapers were telling us that we're, you know, this is the end of the world as we know it. Unprecedented waters. Crash in 1987, largest single day drop still that we've ever had. Unprecedented waters. 1993 and 1994, the Fed increasing interest rates, I think 9 times over a 12-month period. I may be a little wrong off of that, but it was a lot. Unprecedented waters. The tech bubble that we had and the big burst and the run-up in tech. Unprecedented waters. I wonder if we'll look back at now, sometime in the future, and realize that this was one of the best buying opportunities when there was panic in the streets. I just read that Warren Buffett put $5 billion into Goldman Sachs. And he's a guy who knows just a little bit about buying when everybody else is selling. Okay, so boom, that's a reframe. And I used her trigger phrase, uncharted waters, as my conversational catalyst to get beyond what it was that we were talking about and take her through a linguistic time machine, taking her back taking her out into the future, wondering if from the future, will we look back at today and think to ourselves, wow, what a great opportunity was being presented here. And then taking her out of the little trance-type conversation into a factually verifiable thing, the Warren Buffett that's been in the news as I'm recording this, the fact that he just did a $5 billion stake in Goldman Sachs. So I'm wanting to put a lid on the conversational trance work that I'm doing and get her into today. And what do you think her reaction would be? And in any conversational gamut, what you're going to want to do is calibrate the reaction that the object of your persuasive desire is having. Because if it's not working in her mind, it's not working anywhere. Fortunately, though, with her, got the state change that I was looking for. She was no longer mired in all of the bad news that's happening today, no longer worried about all of the money that she's lost in real estate and lost in stocks. And she's thinking instead about, is this a good time to be plowing more money in there? And in fact, that was the question that she asked me. Do you think this is a good time to be investing? And I said, you know, I really don't know. But it is a good time to be sitting down and reviewing what you're doing with your money. And it's a great time to ask yourself this question. What in your life do you want your money to do for you that you haven't addressed yet or haven't addressed completely? Now, my work here wasn't actually completely done because her reaction was, stop going down. I would like my money to stop going down. Now, I perhaps could have done a better job inoculating against that response, setting things up in such a way that she wouldn't give me that answer. But because I got the reaction that I did, I assumed that I really didn't need to do that. And I was wrong. But that's okay. Because here's the great thing. They're not keeping score. I'm not keeping score. Hopefully, you're not even keeping score. You're in the moment. You're calibrating the reaction that your prospect has. And when something along comes like that, because you're doing this so conversationally, it's easy to now go back and ask the question again and inoculate it this time. So what is inoculation, you might be asking? Well, we inoculate when we ask the magic wand hyper-open-ended question. Because if we merely would ask, if you had a magic wand and could change anything about your financial situation, what would you change? Now, I can tell you from having answered that or having asked that question that very frequently the answer that you get back has to do with, hey, give me Saturday night's lottery numbers and I'm good to go. That's all I need. If you can give those to me with your magic wand, then baby, all my dreams are coming true. So we have to inoculate against that response by using the phrase realistic magic wand instead of magic wand. That's an inoculation. It's pushing us away from the answer that we don't want to get. Another example of that is in the other hyper-open-ended question that we asked, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being perfection. That's an inoculation because perfection is something that we don't believe that we have the right to expect, at least not in this lifetime. So it's going to give the prospect's unconscious mind a push away from that answer to force something a little lower down the scale. So I didn't inoculate her, but now I can go back and easily do that. And I did. I just said, well, yeah, obviously that would be the case. But in addition to the obvious that your money doesn't go down from here, and this is the foundation of the next move up, what else do you want your money to do for you that you don't have in place yet, that you haven't addressed completely? Now, this particular person is extremely actively involved in an animal rescue organization. In fact, she works, my guess is, the equivalent of a whole second job. I think she probably puts in 7 or 8 hours a day, volunteered in an unpaid position working for this animal rescue organization? And when I asked her that question, she said, "That's easy. I'd love to be able to fund the sanctuary." Now, this is a mental quantum leap for her. Away from declines in the marketplace, the fact that she knew, without having to look it up, just quantitatively, she knew it was down about 25% from the highs a year earlier, to now suddenly be talking about what her money can do for her, not about her money. And this leap is gigantic. This is the first step that you're looking for in your process. The moment that we start talking about what's most important to you about what your money can give to you, we've made a quantum leap in our conversational trail. Now, at this point in the conversation, I did something very, very well and something very, very poorly. And I knew the second that I did it, I had really screwed up. But again, if you understand where it is that you're going, the fact that you go off course a little bit is not the end of the world. In fact, it's not even the end of the conversation. So here we are. I've made the quantum leap with this person toward what her money is going to do for her. And I anchored that in verbally by saying, the sanctuary. That's really what it's all about at the end of the day, isn't it? And she got this dreamy look in her eyes that, because I was watching and paying attention, I could see that I was definitely on the right track. And I mean, her eyes almost kind of like half misted up a little bit. And she said, "It really is." So boom, man, I have literally hit the conversational nail on the head, but then I missed my exit. My next question was, well, let me ask you, how much would it take for you to be able to fund the sanctuary? Now, this is actually not a bad question to ask, but where I've asked it is horrible. And in fact, what it ended up being is the wet towel or the wet pail of water that I'm throwing onto the fire and dousing all of these embers that I've been stoking to try to get born into a big flame. In fact, that's a question that I'm going to need to ask at some point. In fact, all of the questions that you ask, the Ibbots and charts and hypothetical illustrations and the how much money, all of those things, we need to ask those questions. But here's what we want to do. We want to ask them those questions once we've got the mental buy-in that our client is going to take the journey and they're going to take it with us. And then all of a sudden, those questions about how much and how often and when and all of those types of things, they become important, but you've already got the buy-in. So they then become the necessary questions that, in order to help you get to where it is that you want to go, I have to understand where you are today and where it is that you want to go. So I asked an okay question, but I asked it at the exact worst possible time. Now, my GPS was working, though, because I was watching her in the moment, and I saw that misty, faraway, dreamy sort of look go from that to a crunched up look that we all get when we're sitting down and working on our budget or our taxes or our expense accounts. The moment was over, and it was over in a very big and thankfully obvious way. So once I noticed her mentally struggling, I literally said to her, "You know what? Stop. Don't answer that question. Don't even think about that right now. Because you know what? That's not real important. I want to get back to where we were a second ago, because I could see from the look in your eye just how important the sanctuary is for you. And you know what? Up until now, I didn't really realize just how much this must mean to you. And tell me a little bit more about that. So just know that any time that you realize you went down the wrong path, you can correct it. As you increase your sensory acuity and your ability to watch what's going on in the mind of the person that you're talking to, you'll be able to correct more quickly. If you get really sharp, which I wasn't in this particular situation, but sometimes am, often am, then you'll be able to know that you don't even want to go down that path to begin with. I went back and recognized the mistake, and I said, you know what, forget about that. Don't answer that question. But I'm seeing that this really means a lot more to you than I think I've ever realized that it means to you. So tell me a little bit more about that. So she went on with the story of what she'd like to do and why that's important to her. And as she was telling that story, I just kept it going. I mean, she got to the point where about the joy and the sense of contribution and the good feelings that she gets inside from the work that she does with that organization. So from that point on, it was easy to accelerate the emotions that she was experiencing and work toward the floodgate experience by saying, as you imagine yourself out at some point in the future, having achieved this dream of being able to fund the sanctuary in the way that you want to do it, that you've accomplished that life's goal, what will having that mean to you? Okay, so there's a very different version of the relationship question, the conversational stack question that we talked about earlier, but it's basically accomplishing the same goals. Projecting them out into the future, asking them to build their happiness cake, tell me what the recipe is, and then look back at today and encode it as a memory so you're getting closer to it happening. Now, one thing that I did not do, if you go back and listen to the piece that we just talked about there, that I would do if I was you, or I would do if I was a financial advisor trying to earn the right to have her business, was I did not encode myself into that question. I didn't say, you know, as you think about this, what would we have done, or what would we want to have accomplished? And once we have accomplished that, what would that mean to you? Which, when you're asking the question to a prospect, you definitely want to do that. You want to have them build their happiness cake and bake you right into the recipe.